Morning, everybody. Oh, that's a lovely response. Kids, it might be a good idea to put the flags and musical instruments under your chairs for safekeeping for a bit later on, when they'll be good to use in a bit. Now, a couple of hundred years ago, in a burst of scientific fervour, several clever people spread out all over the globe developed the modern use of identifying people by the little raised ridges on their fingertips and the marks those little raised ridges leave behind. Marks called? Fingerprints. So now, because of that, we can tell where people have been because of what they have touched. And a couple of thousand years ago, in a burst of spiritual fervour, Peter the fisherman stepped out of a boat in the middle of a stormy lake and walked on water towards Jesus. And because of that, we can be inspired to do the same, to take small, scary steps towards Jesus. Selah just read us the story of another man who learned to trust Jesus and act on that trust, and of the fingerprints that God left on his life, so that we can tell where God touched Paul the Apostle. What Paul was doing that day in Jerusalem that we just heard about from Selah has become a Christian practice, something that is a water wing in our lives that will keep us afloat if we do it regularly, helps us when we're trying to trust Jesus and walk on water. What he was doing was telling his story, and not just his story, but the story of God and Paul. And just like Muggs, the library cat, Mr. Muggs, there was lots in Paul's story that people didn't know. They could never have guessed. Lots of things that were a secret life, and things that he needed to tell people so that everyone would understand God better and get to know him better. Because God is invisible to most of us, most of the time. But when God came to live with human beings, as Jesus of Nazareth, lots of people got to see what God is like, what God is really like. And ever since then, Christians have regularly told people of their own personal experiences of meeting Jesus, whether it was in the flesh 2,000 years ago because they lived in Israel, or whether it was in a vision like Paul, how he met Jesus, or whether it was because they read about Jesus in the Bible and heard about Jesus from other people who had read about Jesus in the Bible and perhaps met Jesus in prayer or worship, and that would be the story of many of us here. So today, instead of saying what Paul said and preaching about what Paul's story was in the book of Acts, I thought I would instead do what Paul did and follow his example and tell you some of my own story. Not just my story, but the story of God and Talia. And it's my hope that this will encourage more of us here to do the same, perhaps in writing for people who aren't so keen on microphones and lecterns, perhaps up the front for those of you who wouldn't be too frightened off by that. I hope that this year will be a year where we hear each other's stories more and are encouraged by what we hear and get to know God better by hearing from each other. I'm not going to tell you all of my story. I'm going to tell you a few little key points. It's a tale of three cities, Whanganui and Palmerston North and Wellington. Now, Luke, the writer of Acts, where Selah was reading from, says in chapter 22, verse 2, that the crowd was really interested in what Paul was saying when they realised he was speaking in their own language, in Hebrew. So I'm hoping I've got 10 points on the board straight away by speaking in English today. Also, I hope that there'll be lots of parts of my story that will resonate with your stories. So do feel free to give a little cheer when there's something that we have in common. Who's lived in Whanganui before? Anyone else? Oh, I'm a lonely Whanganui. Oh. Lynn, you lived in Whanganui. Ah, very good. Okay, who's lived in Palmerston North? Ah, a few more. What about Wellington?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, we're off to a good start. So do feel free to give a cheer whenever there's anything else that resonates with you. So the first part of my story, and we probably have the first slide up actually. This is a picture of my parents, Esme and Ian. This is them as newlyweds in Papua New Guinea. They're about the age I am now, which is a bit frightening to think about. So the first thing that we might have in common, apart from the cities that I've lived in, I grew up in a family that was part of a church. Anybody else? A few people? Yep. And the second thing, when I became part of this family, we went to a Presbyterian church. Anyone else been part of a Presbyterian church? Quite a few. And the third thing, the Presbyterian church I went to, it was St. Aidan's in Springvale and Whanganui, the minister there was a woman. Anyone else here be part of a church where the minister's a woman? So looking back, I would say that God's fingerprints were all over my life and my family's life and the life of people at our church, St. Aidan's. Looking back, we can see where God touched us by looking at what has happened in our lives. The church we went to, St. Aidan's, was the church where my mum was confirmed, where she made a public adult statement that she wanted to follow Jesus. It's the church where my dad, against all odds, I must say, became a Sunday school teacher, because there were only two families in the church with children, so he was it. And I still remember the awesome puppets that he got us to make for the nativity play one year, so it would be different and cool. It's amazing. And it's the church where I learned, without ever thinking about it, completely taking it for granted, that women could be ministers. And I considered that to be God's good grace on my life, because if I'd grown up in a different church, I might not have realised that, and I may not have heard God's call on my life to become a minister later on. God's fingerprints were all over our lives, showing where God had touched us, despite God being invisible most of the time to most of us. Now, the next slide is one of my sister's when I was about 7, I think. Yeah, I know, aren't we cute? Brief, peaceful period, that's right. In fact, that must be only a little bit different from the three sisters, the Sulmano sisters, who are three sisters in a row. We must have been just a bit older than Caitlin and Sophie and Maddie. Now, I grew up knowing God. I grew up reading the Good News Bible that my parents gave to me in March 1984. It's written on the inside. I actually started at Genesis. I'm a bit of a geek, and carried right through the Pentateuch and learnt more about skin diseases than I probably needed to know as a six-year-old. But despite growing up knowing God always, there was something missing in my relationship with God for my entire childhood until I was about Nathaniel's age, just younger than him. Because all through my childhood and up to being about Nathaniel's age, I believed in God and I prayed to God. I read my Bible on and off. I went to church every Sunday with my family. We were an every Sunday kind of family. I had a pretty good idea of what was good and bad behaviour, though that didn't always translate to what I actually did. So what was the problem with that? Why was there something missing in my life with God? Putting it in this year's terms, not how I understood it then, but looking back, I was sitting right in the middle of my boat. And I wasn't going anywhere near the water. No way. Not going to get my feet wet. I'm happy where I am in the middle of my wooden boat. I didn't trust Jesus. I knew Jesus, but I didn't trust Jesus. I didn't realise I needed to, really. I thought in my little heart that I needed to rely on me to get through my life. That was the best way of proceeding. And I would do whatever I needed to do to survive and enjoy my life without much reference to God or anyone else, or even all the things that I knew to be true about how people should behave. Now, of course, I couldn't have expressed it like that when I was Caitlin's age, or when I was Hannah's age, or even when I got to be Jacob's age. But I think that is what was going on inside me. I was convinced that I could only rely on myself. Certainly never entered my head to rely on Jesus. And that's where I stayed until I was about 15. and lured to an Anglican youth group in Palmerston North. This is the second city, as I've said before, because I heard there were lots of cute boys there. There were. Although Hester assures me that Central Baptist in Palmerston North had lots of cute boys also. But much more important than the several boyfriends I gathered at my time in All Saints was the discovery, and this was news to me, that being a Christian is not really about believing in God, about believing in Jesus. It's really about relying on Jesus and trusting Jesus and acting on that trust. And to do that, you've got to get your feet wet. I didn't understand it in those terms at that time. This whole step out of the boat business, this is a new challenge to me, just as it is to you. This is not something I've been nurturing in my heart for years and, you know, thinking we should all get into. It freaks me out as much as it freaks you out. But I came to understand at All Saints Anglican Church in Palmerston North that I couldn't live my life relying on myself, that I needed Jesus. I just wasn't good enough at running my life, and God would do a better job. And that meant I would need to consult God on how I lived my life, and how I behaved, how I acted, what I did, even if it was scary or hard, because being a Christian isn't actually about believing in Jesus, but about relying on Jesus and trusting Jesus. So it was during my 2 years at All Saints that I first acted differently, first did things because of God, and that's why I'd say it was the most significant time in my whole life, in my life of following Jesus. So one thing I did, I gave up a week of my school holidays, every school holidays for the rest of my high school, to lead at Forest Lakes Children's Camp in Otaki, where I had my own cabin of five or six girls every holidays, of 8 to 10 year olds, and I would live with them for a week. And I would spend the whole week showing them what God was like. And there's nothing like trying to show someone else what God is like to really understand a bit better yourself what God is like. And there's nothing like going outside your comfort zone to grow in your relationship with Jesus. I reckon every teenager should lead on a camp like this. Every teenager who's in a church, oh, I'm getting an amen from Hester. You've done that kind of thing as well? At El Rancho. Yeah. There's just nothing like it. A whole week immersed with great leadership times as well, with all of the teenage leaders being discipled at flipping 6 a.m. in the morning before the kids get up. There's just nothing like it to help you grow. And so guys, teenagers, check out forestlakes.org.nz or El Rancho to see what it's like to lead, because I just thoroughly recommend it. And just as significantly, the other thing that happened, the other way I acted differently because of God when I was at All Saints was when I was in fifth form. What's that? Year 11. Now, many of you will know, I've said before that I had a pretty rough time at school. I didn't enjoy my school life at all. And I had this great scheme when I got to fifth form that I would go to a flash boarding school instead, and that would make things better. I don't know now why I thought that would be any better. I think I had just read too many boarding school novels as a child. And it seemed glamorous and exciting and everything would be different and better. So I applied for, and I got a scholarship to a flash private boarding school, and I was thinking I would go away, I'd start a new life, and it would be awesome. But as I got the acceptance, I thought, why would I leave All Saints? Why would I leave my community that has been nurturing my relationship with Jesus and helping me to grow more than I ever have in my life, to go among strangers, and who knows how I would do and what support I would have? And so I remember making an appointment with my youth pastor, Phil Trotter, who's now in Christchurch, and saying, you know, this is my dilemma. And I decided in the end not to go to that boarding school. And so that was the first time in my life that I not only did something scary and against my instincts, but I gave something up because of God. And that's the kind of stepping out of the boat action that I think really cements your relationship with Jesus. When you sacrifice something because you think it's what God wants you to do. So that was hugely significant for me. It was through having a crush on another boy that I ended up at Karori Baptist in Wellington when I moved there to go to Victoria University to study law and arts at Vic. Yes, that is the story of my life up till about that point. And I only mentioned the boy part because that's the last thing I want to share this morning. When I was 18 and was a youth leader at Karori Baptist and really entering a new phase of growth in my understanding of God and my following of Jesus, I became convinced by God that it was not appropriate for me to date guys who weren't Christians, that it was not appropriate for me to date anyone who it wasn't likely that or possible that, I would eventually marry, that just dating. Oh, cheer when that resonates with your experience. Excellent. Not because, you know, we had anything going on and I turned you down. No. There's a bit of cheering going on, yeah. Yeah. So lots of people will have had that experience of realizing that, dating and going out with people just because you like them or have a crush on someone is not actually Christian behavior, but that it's a legitimate way of discovering whether you are ready to marry somebody. So I became convinced that all of these really interesting guys around the place, it wasn't actually appropriate for me to think of them in terms of romantic relationships, because it was only going to be appropriate for me to eventually one day, if I were to marry someone who was also following Jesus. Now that was hugely significant because, as has become apparent in my story so far, boys were quite an important part of my life. And that began a period of, how long was it? 12 years of being single. And in that 12-year period, there were four particular men along the way who were not Christian, who I got on with like a house on fire, who, if I had not made that decision, would have been perfectly plausible, likely marriage partners, wonderful guys. And in each case, I had to make the decision to not go down that path with each of those men and make the decision that even though this was a really great guy right in front of me who, you know, it looked like we could have this great future together, all those kinds of things, that I needed to give the idea of a relationship with him up, and not because there was necessarily even someone else along the track, maybe because being single was better than that option. And I had to come to terms, as the months of this decision turned into years, turned into 12 years, I had to really come to terms with how singleness can be an excellent path for a Christian person, and how it's something that plenty of people experience in their lives at different points, and some throughout their lives. And I want to emphasize that point. At no time in this path did I have the sense that God wanted me to stay single now because there was someone in the future. I'm very fortunate to have met Matt and to have married him. But I had no sense of assurance that that was likely to happen. And there are plenty of people in churches all around the country who never meet that person. And there's a balance of statistics that means that that's likely for women in particular. And then when I decided to go to Kerry and become a minister, I thought that my chances of meeting someone were, you know, dwindling, because the pool of people likely to want to marry me and have their pastor be their wife, you know, pretty unlikely. And so all of this was about trusting God with perhaps being single for my whole life, when actually what I wanted to do was marry. So this was serious stepping out of the boat for 12 years, another step one in front of the other along the water, trusting Jesus. And it was a period where I grew faster than any other. When Peter stepped out of the boat and took those small, scary steps towards Jesus, he sacrificed the feeling of solid wood underneath his bottom in between him and the raging lake. When Paul stepped out of the boat and became a travelling teacher, telling people all over the world about Jesus, he sacrificed safety and security and good health and friends and family, and ended up in jail and shipwrecked and stoned. And the times I have stepped out of the boat, God has asked me to sacrifice potential marriage partners, scholarship to a flash boarding school, and in other parts of my story that I haven't told today, to sacrifice a career as a lawyer, to sacrifice life in the town of my heart, Wellington, to sacrifice perfectionism, to sacrifice self-sufficiency, and a few other things along the way. And those were all things that I wanted. But now I wouldn't change a single thing. I wouldn't change a single thing now. Because I've discovered all along the way that God is to be trusted. God is to be trusted. And God's fingerprints are all over my life, signs that God has touched my life despite being invisible most of the time to most of us. And God has held me up on the water. May it continue to be so. In 2011, we'd like to hear more of your stories, to hear how God has touched your life, to help us to understand God better and to get to know you more. So this Lent begins this Wednesday. Can I encourage you to take some time away from screen-based entertainment? That's our Lent challenge this year again. I know it's exciting, eh, Will? But you're going to do it, eh? Will's my champion on this. So this Lent, can I encourage you, in part of the time that you spend away from screen-based entertainment, to consider your story and to write down some of the key moments when that have been significant in your life of following Jesus. And then maybe to consider, just maybe to ask God about considering sharing that story with us. Now, you might be able to do it up the front at the lectern and the microphone, or perhaps if that's something that isn't really you, perhaps you could write it down. Maybe we can make a collection of our stories to share in writing. Because we want to know you and we want to know God better. This is something that is a stepping out of the boat experience for almost all of us. I don't think there's anyone here who would say, oh yeah, I'll do that tomorrow, sweet, fine. It's something that takes courage and trust, but it is a water wing. It's something that keeps us afloat as a community as we step out of the boat. So can I encourage you to just ask God, just to consider whether this might be something God is calling you to this Lent. Because just like Mr. Muggs, the library cat, there's lots of surprising stuff in all of our stories that we need to share if we're going to know each other well and to get to know God better together. May it be so.